Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 102. We are discussing the WGC HSBC Champions and the Bermuda Championship on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm in fine fettle.
Good.
I had a really bad night's sleep, but I'm in fine fettle for some reason. By about 2 o'clock, I'll be collapsing on my bed, I expect.
You're dreaming about your Bermuda Championship winners overnight, keeping you awake, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't that. It was my son that kept walking into to my bedroom.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't help, does it?
Time change. Not good. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Follow Paul at Golf Betting, and you can follow me at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've just recorded the HSBC Champions show, which I will place in this podcast description box. Podcast, it's available on a whole plethora, that's a good word, of podcast platforms. Apple, we're now on Google Podcasts, we're on Spotify. We're on Podbean. You can find us wherever you want to. We're also on YouTube. And as I always say each and every week, we would love you to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever way you think of it, because those ratings and reviews give us a huge boost in terms of our visibility. Now, I will read our latest review, which comes from Born Unlucky, who is in Great Britain. Thank you for your time, Born Unlucky. He actually tweeted me to say, I think he said it was the first time in about 8 years that he's actually logged in to iTunes to actually place this review. The title is 100 Not Out, 5 Stars. The best golf betting podcast there is bar none. The depth of information in the podcast and in particular on the website is invaluable. Brilliant. Whether you decide to follow Steve and Paul's tips blind or just you use the information to find your own betting angles, Golf Betting System is essentially for any golf punter. Congratulations on reaching 100 episodes. Not many podcasts of any sort do that. Keep up the good work, fellas. You save me hours of donkey work every week. That is true, because we do the donkey work for you. Many thanks, and here's to the next 100 episodes. So thank you, Born Unlucky. That is a superb piece of feedback. Yeah, thank you.
Very nice. Thank you very much for taking the time to do that, and for clearly having to dig out your Apple password that was probably long since forgotten.
Oh, mate.
8 years down the line. I'll
have been going through my folder of passwords that if anyone broke into my house would find quite easily. I shouldn't be saying that on a podcast. should we talk about last week?
Yes.
We won't talk about Tiger first off. That's boring. You know, my Twitter feed's been blowing up.
Yeah, Tiger
Let's
mania.
Talk about your Justin Walters 125-1 bet.
Yeah, it's. I guess...
It's frustrating, isn't it, when you almost had the winner?
Yeah, in one way, you look at it at the start of the week and you put up some shorter prices and you put up some longer prices, and the kind of hope with these guys that are three figures is that they can sneak an each way place. And when they do, it's nice. It sorts your week. It sorts 2 or 3 weeks out, really. But then when they get that close, it's frustrating that they don't actually convert. And he had a great chance, Walters, didn't he? He's two shots clear at one point on Saturday. He was, probably on Friday, actually, thinking about it, because Saturday was the day that he...
It was Saturday. I was watching it in the clubhouse.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
He was too clear, yeah.
It was kind of birdie-bogey on Saturday, wasn't it? And he kind of got that iffy round out of his system. Then for 15 holes on Sunday, was just getting closer and closer to the lead. And, you know, you thought at one point he's going to do this, but a couple of bogeys on the 16th and then the final hole, and ends up losing out by a shot to Stephen Brown, who was in a similar kind of predicament, wasn't he, Brown? He needed to, he needed a top two finish to secure his card. And
wow. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It is.
And the last time I came across Stephen Brown, correct me if I'm wrong, I know, when I actually looked yesterday morning what he'd done prior to winning in Portugal, he'd finished 11th the week before, didn't he?
He did, in France, yeah, that's right.
But the only time I've come across him, in my mind, was when he was in that, was it a 4 or 5 man playoff at, was it in Denmark?
Yeah,
the one that Matt Wallace won.
Yeah, there's him and Jigger Thompson, wasn't there? And was the other one, Zanotti, someone like that. I forget who the fourth person was, wasn't it? But yeah, Brown was in that, and that was the closest that he had come prior to winning.
And hadn't top 10 between then and now, I believe.
No. And yeah, clearly,
what price was he?
150s, 150-1. Even though that he'd finished, as you said, he'd finished 11th the week before in France, so had shown some signs of life. But prior to that, there was just a string of miscuts and poor finishes. So that looked like a bit of a bolt out of the blue. Had got no previous really tangible course form at Portugal, so it was quite easy to leave out. Even though had flashed a little bit of form, but. He was great, wasn't he? You know, bogey free weekend actually for Brown. And
we came from completely off the pace, didn't we?
He did, yeah. And when you've got your playing privileges, you know, all of that pressure on you coming down the stretch, and to produce 2 bogey free rounds, and to reel in stone, and to keep Waters at bay. I can't begrudge Brown the win, and I can't be too disappointed really with Waters for not winning, because the interviews that you see with him, the raw emotion is just it brings it all home really. Fair play to the pair of them. Disappointing, yes, not to get the win, but profitable overall. The one that I was really disappointed with actually was Darren Fickard. Who I didn't tip. I had him in one of my DraftKings teams. I put 5 teams in last week, and they were built around my tips, and then just a couple of odd players here and there. And one of them had Fickard in. And I was leading the DraftKings, the main GPP, at various points over the weekend, and ended up finishing 5th in it because Fickard went out and shot 7-7 over his final 2 holes. So bogey, treble bogey.
So like me down at the Royal Dorset Golf Club on Friday.
So I'm keeping
I was shooting 12-10 for my first 2 holes. Yeah, two holes rather than final.
That's probably the equivalent of Fickard's 7-7. But yeah, I was keeping a close eye on it, clearly, as I was getting closer to the end. And then it was more about what Waters was going to do. So I took my eye off the ball a little bit with Fickard, and then came back and saw that he'd dropped about 30 places down the leaderboard over the final 2 holes and absolutely torpedoed my team, which... Not the best.
Thanks for that, Dan.
Not the best.
What is it with that? What is it? Was it just the relatively dry conditions that brought these South Africans flying in from every direction on the leaderboard?
Potentially. There was a lot of them, wasn't there? They clearly relished the conditions last week.
It was fairly firm, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's we've seen.
Hence,
years...
it wasn't quite as low as we usually see the scoring there.
No, and we've seen years go by in years past where it's been really soft because of the weather conditions. A few tweaks to the course toughened it up a little bit, but nothing major. But yeah, as you say, it wasn't as soft and receptive as we've seen in some years. And perhaps that did bring these bent grass loving South Africans into the mix a little bit more in drier conditions. So,
yeah.
One to consider when you see a similar kind of forecast for Portugal in the years to come, I think.
Over in Japan, of course, Tiger claimed his 82nd PGA Tour victory, which ties him for the top, is it, with Sam Snead?
Yeah, it's an incredible performance, isn't it? Incredible career performance.
The number that I saw on a tweet which really grabbed my attention was the fact that he's won 3 times in his last 11 tournaments. Mm. And you wouldn't grant that, would you?
No.
But he starts sporadically, but 3 wins in his last 11. And he was 33-1. But He hadn't played since the BMW Championship, but clearly this knee surgery has completely revolutionised him physically.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden there's less strain on his back. He was just saying in the interviews that went off after he'd actually hit the front, saying how his practice has been so much better.
Yeah.
I think what it does do is put everyone on high alert for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at those three wins, they were all decent events, very strong events with 60 or more OWGR points as the prize for the top winner. So they weren't just Mickey Mouse events, as we know. They were decent, decent
Tour events. Championship, the Masters and the Zozo. Absolutely. No, not Mickey Mouse.
No. Which
they weren't, noticeably they weren't full field events. So there's something to potentially look at. But yeah.
But yeah, as you say,
most people, I personally, I'm sure there are people out there, I don't think anyone was really getting involved on him last week at 33-1 on the base he hadn't started for over 2.5 months.
He's always going to be a tough call. He was
37th at the BMW last time out.
He's always going to be a difficult one to try and assess. And as you say, you had the surgery that had happened in the meantime. And, it should have been a watching brief for everyone. And the bet that I saw on our Facebook group, which I really thought was positive, was one of the guys on there backed him after the first three holes. And you remember, he started bogey, bogey, bogey for the tournament. So he effectively gave everyone a 3-shot head start anyway. And the guy, I forget his name, on the Facebook group picked him up at 90-1 after those first three holes. And the rest's history, as you know. Very impressive.
We said in the podcast last week, firstly, I said I thought Asian form was important. I said that form in Japan was important. We mentioned Dunlop Phoenix. He'd won that twice.
Yeah.
We also spoke through all the different President's Cup scenarios, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I chose Woodland, who got in the mix and delivered.
Yeah.
Plateaued over the weekend, that was disappointing, but there you go. I think a lot of that was playing 36 holes with Tiger. And the pressure that brings, the crowd and the focus and everything.
Yeah.
But the
whole circus, isn't there?
The one, and we mentioned Sung Jae-im, Corey Connors on the international side. The one person that never entered my mind was the fact that Tiger would want to go out and win it just to say, well, there you go. I'm going to play.
I'm picking myself.
I'm going to be the President's Cup playing captain.
Yeah, I'm picking myself, and there's absolutely no reason to contest it because
no.
I deserve that pick.
Interesting now then. So he's going to clearly play. That leaves three spots.
Mm.
You'd assume that Woodland's going to be very hard not to pick now that he's the reigning US Open champion and has just gone 3-4 in his last two tournaments.
Yeah.
Patrick Reed won in the playoffs and is Captain America. And that then leaves, Tony Finau? Is he going to be forced to pick Phil Mickelson because the networks and the PGA of America would like him to, even though he's playing awfully? And there might be quite a drama with the US press if he doesn't pick Phil and the rivalry and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. We will find out on Monday, of course, because the four captain picks are going to be released and revealed after the HSBC Champions this week.
Yeah, big week for Tony Finau as well, isn't it? Because he's playing over in Shanghai, so it's make or break for him this week.
I think if Finau was to contend and go very, very close, in a way, that's almost saying, you'd be mad to pick Phil Mickelson unless Phil comes from the dead this week, which could happen.
He's won twice around here, so you never know.
There haven't been many positive signs, though, have there?
No,
and he's played a lot more golf over the last few months than Tiger Woods had.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting decision. As you say, Monday will be the day to keep an eye on it.
Right then. You've pulled together your WGC HSBC Champions preview this week. Do you want to crack on?
Yeah, I guess it is by far the biggest tournament this week as well, because the alternate Bermuda Championship is particularly weak, isn't it? Which we'll come to in a few minutes. But and to be fair, this week's HSBC Champions isn't the strongest. I mean, out of the four WGCs anyway, it tends to be the one that's weaker of the four. But at least you get a good chunk of the world's top 10 that attend the other three. And this one really is the poor relation, isn't it? So
yep.
We've only got, from the top 10, McIlroy, Rose and Xander, who's defending. Outside of that, everyone's dipping a bit further down the world rankings. So I think, you know, strictly speaking, I expect the Zozo field last week was probably stronger.
Yeah, it was.
Than this, which does make a bit of a mockery of the WGC status. Anyway, it's still a decent event. We're off to China, as we know. It's the final WGC of the season. Rory heads the betting this week at 6-1. Hideki Matsuyama at 12-1. Xander 14-1. Rose at 16. Paul Casey 22. Tony Finau, we just mentioned, 25-1 this week. Tommy Fleetwood 25-1. As you said off mic, Steve, he's going to have to lose an arm before he's going to be any deeper in the bet in the 25-1. I think it's doesn't
appear. He never seems to lengthen in price, does he?
No, it doesn't. You know, you might take a chance on someone like Tommy Fleetwood if he was a backable price.
No, if he was playing consistently fantastic stuff in top 10 every week, I might understand it.
He was
28-1 last week for the Zozo Championship, Tommy Fleetwood. And based on his 20-something position, he's been cut to 25s for this one.
Yeah, there must have been something in there that I've missed, I think. So Fleetwood 25s, Patrick Reed at 30, Adam Scott 33-1, Song Jae Im 33s, Henrik Stenson 33s. Then you've got the likes of Bernd Wiesberger, Jordan Spieth at 35s, 40-1. Bar those dozen or so players. So,
how much did you lose on Jordan Spieth with your
my children's inheritance?
Zozo Championship? Yeah. He started with the fly. Was it 6 over after the first round?
Yeah, I think it might have been 5, but I'd given up by that point.
he hit 3 of 18 greens, I believe, in round one.
Yeah, that doesn't tend to work. Doesn't tend to help, does it?
Yeah. No, that's my kind of standard of play.
Sometimes you kind of look at these events and see something that's completely just not there, don't you? And slap yourself on the forehead after 18 hours and realise it was just money down the drain. Yeah, there was that and Graham McDowell who decided after 18 hours to knock it on the head, didn't he? So, it wasn't a particularly good Zozo Championship for myself.
He plays next week at Mayakoba, McDowell.
Yeah, well, that's
one to keep a note on.
That's, you know, despite the performance last week, I think there's enough underlying.
How many times have we seen a WD and then someone just pops up?
Yeah, as you know, with any type of WD, you don't tend to know the full story of it. So there could be all sorts of reasons to dig into for Graham McDowell. So,
sorry, we digress.
Indeed, just wallowing in the pain of two missed bets last week. So, yeah, back to the course then. Shashan has hosted this event since 2005, except for 2012, when it headed over to Mission Hills, which Ian Poulter won that week. I was on Poulter. Yeah, I was on Poulter that week. I remember picking it out nicely, which was nice. It's a shame it's not gone back to Mission Hills, because clearly I've got a little bit of a grip on that particular track. But we're back to Shashan. So if you're looking at the course history stats on the site this week, then bear in mind that 2012 was on a different track. All the others, even before the HSBC Champions became a WGC event, it was still held here at Shashan in Shanghai. It's 7,261 yard par 72, relatively wide but tree-lined track. Standard 72 fair, really. So 4 par 5s, a drivable par 4 on there as well. Reasonably speedy bent grass greens. The thing with this track is historically it hasn't really favoured any particular type of player over one another. There's been a lot of different styles get into the mix at various points over the years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 2014 was the...
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got Bubba Watson winning in 2014, I think it was.
Yep.
And then the year after that, Russell Knox.
Yep.
I mean, if you want two polar opposites in just the winner circle.
Yeah.
And I remember the year Bubba won, and you put it in the preview. He beat Tim Clark in a playoff.
Bubba Watson and Tim Clark playoff. I don't think you could have if you'd have tried to do that as a straight forecast or a dual forecast.
Yeah, I know. It took a miracle for Bubba to win it, didn't he? Didn't he chip in on the last to make the playoff?
He held a bunker incredible shot, didn't he? I think he held a bunker shot for Eagle or something like that on the last. And
otherwise, Tim Clark would have had a WGC to his name.
Well, that's it. And then it changes the dynamic of the way you assess this tournament, doesn't it? Because Tim Clark wins and then Russell Knox wins. And you've got the likes of Francesco Molinari who've won it in the past. And you think, well, you know, there's that kind of track. But then the other way of looking at it is, of course, you've got Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, Phil Mickelson, players who, you know, again, they're entirely different in terms of their style and the length of the tee.
Last year we had the three-way shootout between X-Man or Brooks Koepka Light.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Rose and Tony Finau is just Bomber City.
Yep. And the point with Xander last year, he hit one third of fairways over the course of the entire week. 33.3% of fairways in the entire
week.
Which I know you don't, particularly on the PGA Tour over in America, you don't tend to have to be the most accurate to get the job done. But even so, if you're missing two thirds of fairways in any tournament, you're leaving yourself in all sorts of trouble. He got the job done. A mad, mad number for that. I'll just run through some of the previous winners' odds, because that does tell a story of the kind of player we may be looking for this week. Going back to 2010, Francesco Molinari won at 55s. 2011 was Martin Kaymer at 25-1. Poulter won at Mission Hills in 2012 at 20-1. So you can kind of scrub that from your analysis, I think, this week. Dustin Johnson was 40-1 the year after. Bubba, as we've said, 28. Now, Russell Knox is the only real outlier in this list, 150-1. And that was Russell Knox's maiden WGC. In fact, his debut WGC performance, or the first time he'd actually played a WGC. So, picking him out with some indifferent form in the lead-up to it, too, at 150-1 would have been some coup if you could have been on him. 2016, Hideki Matsuyama, 22-1. Justin Rose at 20s the year after. And Xander was a huge 66-1 last year to win before the event started. But if you take Russell Knox out of the mix, really ranging from kind of the 20-1 bracket all the way up to 55, 66-1 for Xander. So other than Russell Knox, there's not been any massive shocks here, I don't think, over the last few years. And I think when you look through the field this week, there's a lot of players in that kind of sub 50-1 bracket that you could build a case for. So it may not be the week to really attack some of the longer prices, although I have included one in my portfolio this week. But I suspect the winner probably comes from kind of a sub 50-1 or shorter bracket this week. Differing styles, as we've talked about. I mean, for me, generally, I think you need to be hitting a lot of greens here. You need to be putting well. If you look at all of those names I just read through, the worst putting performance on the week was 18th relative to the field. Most of the winners here had kind of a top five or top eight type of putting performance. I think your flat stick needs to be pretty warm. And I think if you're hitting a lot of greens in regulation, clearly if you play it like Xander and you're attacking everything from the rough, then it's going to be tougher to do so. If that's the case, then you're going to need an absolute stellar short game. Now, last year was the real outlier, I guess, in terms of stats, because the top eight or so players all had fantastic short game and fantastic putting performances, and GIR was kind of left on the shelf for last year. I suspect this year the conditions are going to be slightly easier. I think it's going to be dry. I think it's going to be a little warmer and a little less windy than it was last year and the year before. 14 under won the last 2 years, and I suspect we're going to get a little bit deeper into the higher teens, I expect, this week, which again changes the dynamic for me a little. I think GIR is going to be a more useful stat to use this week. And in terms of incoming form of those winners, all of them had a top 12 finish in the last five starts. And this is a fairly elite field, so you'd expect that from a bulk of the players. But if you're going to be as rigid as that, you can scrub a few players from your list this week. In terms of course form, as I said, Russell Knox was a debutant. Dustin Johnson was a debutant when he won. Yet you've got the likes of Rose and Molinari, Keimer, Bubba Watson, all of them had top 10 here before. Phil Mickelson, as we said before, has won this event twice. So I guess you weigh it all up, and there's a number of ways you can attack it. I mean, for me, I think one of the elite players at the top is likely to win it. Rory McIlroy is the clear favourite this week. But for me, Rory keeps producing this one round. Often it's the first round as well, which is taking him out of golf tournaments. And if you're backing him at 6-1 this week, you've got to hope that he gets out of the blocks relatively quickly. Xander, it was interesting, Xander, because I think he has fared reasonably well when he's defended his title so far in his career. You know, he's not had that many chances to do so, and I'm sure he'll have plenty of chances to do so as he works through his career over the next few years. I suspect from his own perspective, it'll be a mental hurdle for him to overcome to find a way to defend a golf tournament. We've talked before about Xander and what really gets his juices flowing, and when he's out of contention, it kind of tends to...
Well, he did it again last week.
Yeah, he kind of takes his foot off the
He shoots a 65 in round three to get himself right in the mix. Bearing in mind I had Woodland and Xander, yeah? And you're thinking, well, if I can get two in the each-way spots here, that's a nice little week.
Yeah.
Quite profitable. And then, sure enough, once Woods goes how many shots clear, Xander starts throwing bogeys in everywhere and ends up finishing 10th.
Yeah.
And that's just him.
He does.
He's barely an each-way punt, you know. He's barely an each-way punt because he either wins or doesn't... You know, he came second, I think, didn't he, at Tour Championship?
Yeah,
but
and again...
He just loses complete focus once he knows that he can't win.
Is that more a case of, you know, with the Tour Championship, there was some, you know, there was an extra motivation there. He'd clearly won the tournament before. You know, again, is he trying to prove something to himself? Where he goes to somewhere where there's less kind of mental stimulation for him almost. And as soon as the chance has gone, that's it. It's almost downing tools, isn't it? And just go through the motions for the rest of the...
And at 14-1, you can't really do that, can you?
No, I'm with you.
From a punter's perspective, it's win or bust, really, isn't it?
I'm with you.
Otherwise, you're backing very little else in the field.
No, it's kind of, anything kind of sub 25-1 with Xander, it's almost as if, well, you don't play him each way. You go win only and accept the fact that he might win or he might end doing absolutely nothing or doing absolutely nothing on the Sunday once he's out of... out of contention. Now, for me, at the top end, I couldn't really build much of a case for any of the other guys, Rose or Casey or Tony Finau. Clearly, Finau's going to be motivated with this President's Cup scenario. Tommy Fleetwood, as we've just touched on, there's nothing really exciting me. The only one who I am excited about and I've backed win only is Hideki Matsuyama. Twice the price of Rory and... You know, the only thing that you might pull negatively out of Matsuyama is that he's not won for the last 2 years. The last time he did win, I mean, for a player of his standard and quality, that's a mad stat. But the last time he did win was at a WGC. That was at Akron for the WGC Bridgestone back in 2017. We were on board that week, actually, when he played fantastic, didn't he? The final round that day was some of the best ball striking that you see from a professional golfer. He was incredible that week. And some changes since, though. He's lost a bit of weight. These golfers are constantly striving for that next level of athleticism, aren't they? And he lost something like 7 kilos trying to improve his physique, changed his caddy, became a father in the meantime. And all of this over the last couple of years, nothing's happened in terms of his... in terms of his winning form. What I can see, though, is over the last few weeks, he seems to be much better. There seems to be something percolating. And you occasionally pick up snippets. He doesn't do many English interviews, but when you do grab something where he's given something back in English, there's some seriously positive signs and words that are coming from himself as to how he feels that his game's coming along. And third at the CJ Cup, where he finished with a 65, sided his way through the field that week. Second last week behind Tiger. And to be fair, he probably coming into Sunday or coming into the final round or the final parts of the final round, he really needed a barrage of birdies. And it didn't quite happen. He missed a short one that would have put him within a shot of the lead at that point and maybe exerted a little bit of pressure on Tiger. But I don't think Tiger was going to relinquish that anyway, really. But his irons look really good both weeks. He's back into the high GIR stats for him. He was first for putting last week overall in Japan, which was really positive. And if you go back through his history, when he's got these spikes in his putting performances, a win tends to be just around the corner. He'd done something very similar before he won that last event in Akron at the BMW at the WGC Bridgestone back in 2017. That purple patch that we saw at the end of 2016, the year before, where he won four times in the space of five events. Again, it was just where his normal game had been absolutely where he expected it to be, but suddenly there's that spark and that sustained form with the putter. And if you look during that stretch back in 2016, one of those wins was here. He absolutely sauntered to a seven-shot victory that year. So loves the course, playing some decent stuff. I couldn't find any reason really to oppose Hideki this week. There's enough to like about him to put a decent sizable chunk on for a win only bet. 12-1, I can't really justify going each way on him this week, but I think he's the most likely winner, so I'll back him accordingly. Three others that I've backed this week. Bernd Wiesberger's the first one, 30-1. He actually opened up very, very briefly at 50-1 with one firm, which was an absolute mad price for a player who's won three times this year. A couple of them Rolex Series wins that were both in decent enough company. And to be fair, it's got to be respected. 50-1 was never the right price for him. 30-1 is much closer to where he should be this week. And again, I've backed him each way to see how he gets on this week. All seven of his wins have come between 13-under and 22-under, which is absolutely spot on for this track. He doesn't appear to be one of those more technical players who needs a very tough track or a tough scoring week to contend. He needs to see a few of the birdies flowing, and I think that's right up his alley this week. One of those wins was in China at the Shenzhen International back in 2017. I'm going to say maybe a little bit earlier, actually. I forget off the top of my head. Beat Tommy Fleetwood that year. So clearly some decent China form as well. With Wiesberger, fundamentally, he's a GIR merchant. We've seen in the past he grinds out greens and makes the odd putt. What we've noticed over this year, and the reason that he's won three tournaments, is that his putting has moved on to the next level. He's been outstanding with the flat stick. He led the field for putting when he won in Denmark, similar kind of performances when he won his two Rolex Series events. And I think with this potential for him to win the race to Dubai, and he's got a big chance to do it. John Rahm's not playing this week. John Rahm sits second behind him in the standings at the moment. No Rahm, and no Rahm next week either, from what I'm reading. So he's got a massive opportunity to move forward and build what could be an unassailable lead at the top of the race to Dubai. So I'll be interested to see how he goes this week. Shishan Form was 17-35 and 9th on his last appearance. He led the field for greens in regulation last time he played. It all seems to be coming together very nicely for Bernd Wiesberger. And I think, actually, for him, with this race to Dubai scenario, I think the real pressure will come over the next few weeks. I wonder if there's almost like a free hit this week, because he's going to go to this event and there's no Rahm there to exert the pressure on him. And he knows he's playing some fantastic golf. So I think he could go particularly well this week. At 30-1, Tyrrell Hatton is another I've backed, 40-1 for Tyrrell. We've mentioned him a few times on the pod recently as a player who seems to be trending in a positive direction, and I'm happy to jump on board while he's moving in that direction. He's that kind of player, isn't he, where if everything's positive with Tyrrell, then his game's positive, there's a smile on his face, and he can produce some decent results. When it's the opposite, when things are starting to go down and badly and not to the way that he likes them, then it seems to be a kind of a negative spiral. So I think he's on a positive spiral right now, and I think we need to support him accordingly as he's moving up the gears. 12 straight rounds of Pyle Better over the last few weeks, 15th at the Dunhill Links, 18th at the Italian Open, 6th at the CJ Cup on his last start, and 90.3 greens regulation at the CJ Cup. That's a career best for Tyrrell Hatton. So his irons are working very, very nicely indeed at the moment, which again I think is going to be a critical aspect here. If you look at his stats, he missed 31 putts inside 20 feet when he finished 6th at the CJ Cup. Now for Tyrrell Hatton,
how do you get that number?
I think he tweeted it out himself. I think he tweeted himself because they keep these very detailed stats, don't they?
They clearly do. They just don't give them to the likes of us.
No, absolutely. But you know, you look at Tyrrell Hatton, and he's that kind of player. I see there's a few players in world golf that you see standing over a 20, 25 footer. You think, well, you know, he's got a great chance of making that because he's that kind of player. And Tyrrell's one of those players. I think he's a very good mid-range putter. So for him to miss that many after hitting over 90% of greens that week, I don't think that sustains. I think that the next time he gets that many opportunities, he probably makes another 5 or 6 or 8 of those.
Yeah. I agree.
And
I also love motivation for players at this time of the year.
Yeah, it's huge.
And he's got serious motivation, because if he doesn't pull his finger out, he's going to drop out of the world's top 50.
Absolutely. 49th right now. So it's
no Masters appearance or no Masters invite.
No.
Landing on your doormat in December.
No. And he's better than that. He's well entitled to be sitting inside the
the
top 50. So he loves this time of year. And as we've said, he's the kind of player who moves forward positively. Course form of 54th, 23rd, 11th, 22nd is solid. Unspectacular, but I think there's a decent enough foundation there. And I think he's well comfortable now playing at this kind of level. 6th at the Open Championship at Portrush a few months back. He's not overawed, and this is nowhere near the level of a major championship with the field as low as we've talked about already. Finally, I have pushed one player out who's in the three-figure bracket. I've backed Xinjun Zhang, the Chinese player at
Xinjun Zhang. Been playing well, hasn't he, in America?
Well, Zhang, yeah. Mm. 150-1 I got yesterday with Unibet. I see he's been trimmed in a little bit, but there's still some 125s out there in various firms. So if you fancy a bit of Zhang, then I'll jump on quickly, because I think that's a false price. I think he should be 100-1 or shorter, personally. Until this year, all of his wins had come in his homeland. He'd won 4 in China over the last few years. But he seems to have stepped up a level in 2019. 2 wins on the Korn Ferry over the course of the season. He actually led the regular season points list, which meant that he got automatic promotion back to the PGA Tour after having had a pretty poor debut season back in 2018. But he started nicely. He started this PGA Tour season it seems like he's stepped up a gear and up a level. 7th at the Safeway, 16th at the Shriners, 4th in Houston on his last start as well. And all aspects of his game are looking strong. 4th for driving accuracy at the Shriners, 8th for greens in regulation, 4th for putting at Houston. So some very nice stats starting to come through in his game. And you know, you look at someone like Zhang, who's not been at the top level of golf, but because he's Chinese, he's had access to this event over the years, and he's actually played 5 times at Shishan over his career to date. Twice he's sat in 8th position heading into the Sunday, and he's shot a 64 round here as well. I think there's more to like about him at this price than a lot of players who are kind of between that 60, 66, 80, 100 to 1 bracket. I think he's playing some nice golf.
He is 16-1 in the top Asian market.
Mm.
Again, that could be an angle.
Yeah, Yeah, some of these side markets can throw up a nice little bit of
Just to put that in perspective, Paul, Hao Tong Li, who's in absolutely horrible form, is 10-1.
Yeah, exactly. And Lee does play, Hao Tong Li plays some nice golf when he comes back to China, but as you say, there's just not enough there to justify a punt on him. I'd far prefer Xinjun Zhang this week. So 150-1 was my final dart for this particular week. For that, so that's my four. Any others that caught your eye, Steve?
Like Matsuyama.
Hmm.
Sometimes he goes on these hot streaks, doesn't he?
He does, especially when the putter's warm.
It tends to be when he's been home. And it, as you said, it tends to be when he's actually found the putter. Mm. Is Rory bothered? I dug into this a few weeks ago. Actually, it was last week because of the Zozo being the same week that the HSBC usually is.
Yeah.
And the winner of the HSBC tends to be someone that's finishing the top 15 of the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
Which Matsuyama did. And it tends to be someone that hasn't won for a period of time, yeah, which Matsuyama hasn't.
Yep. Yeah. It all seems to be adding up to that kind of answer, I think. He was by far my standout bet and standout pick this week. I think he's the champion elect here.
If I'm going down the angle I've been chasing for a long while and President's Cup, the one I think will come from the mid-pack is Patrick Reed, because he has to.
Mm.
He has to give Tiger no option not to pick him.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because, for example, if he goes down the line of Woodland, Finau has a great week, he picks Phil Mickelson because he's kind of told he needs to and he's picking himself, all of a sudden Reed could be missing out, although, you know, he's Captain America. I just think to make sure that he's in that four player selection, he will get very, very elevated on the leaderboard this week.
Yeah.
The other American that I always think is continually almost overlooked is Billy Horschel.
Mm.
And you look at Horschel, the reason that tends to be is because his major championship record is awful. He's only ever finished in the top 10 once, 2013 US Open. And actually, up until recently, his WGC record was poor, which for a player of his ilk and his quality is kind of shocking. But he was 11th here last year, and at the last WGC at St Jude, he was 9th, which is his first top 10 in a WGC. Bearing in mind that Horschel was finished, I think it was 6th last week when he was 3rd for putting average, yeah? And he was also very, very competitive when he finished 4th at Wentworth.
Yep. Yep.
So he's finished 4th and 6th in his last three outings. I just think he could pop into the mix this week at a WGC level.
Yep.
I'm seeing up to 40-1.
Yeah, 11th last year as well. So clearly starting to get his head around the course. I guess for me personally, once I've gone down the route of those two kind of mid-price players,
Adam's
tough. But I can see.
I do like Hatton as well. Yeah. I think Hatton's got the kick up the rear that he needs, and he's certainly starting to. That putter will come.
Yes.
We said
absolutely.
Last week.
Yeah.
The putter will come. It has to when you're just creating so many good chances.
Mm. Hopefully this week.
Mm, I think so. Right, the Bermuda Championship. This is new on the PGA Tour schedule. I've seen some interesting tweets recently about, especially with these alternate second division tournaments that run alongside a major or WGC. And basically saying, I wish that they would open up the criteria to include better Korn Ferry Tour or international players.
Yeah.
Because this week, it has to be said, for a 120-man field, to be inviting Keith Clearwater to play is it's shocking, really.
Yeah. They've had to scrape the barrel, which is a shame, really, isn't it, for any PGA.
I mean, there are names on the alternate list that I didn't even realise had played on the PGA Tour.
They were adding more to the alternate list on Sunday night because people were dropping out like flies. So just to make sure they had enough alternates to keep the event going.
Now, I didn't realise that Bermuda is such a golfing commune. Mm. Seven courses packed into 21 square miles. And when we say courses, of course, being in Bermuda, being such an American tourist destination, they are of high quality.
Yeah.
And they are playing the Port Royal Golf Course, which is the best course on the island. It also hosted the PGA Grand Slam of Golf from 2009 through 2014. And that was the event that they would try and get all of the reigning major champions to play.
Yeah.
Now, you can draw your own conclusions from this because, you know, it was organised by the PGA of America. I would assume that the PGA of America set quite stringent course kind of setup outliers, if you like. Because every interview I read over that period say, the gruff was quite, you know, tough and blah, blah, blah. With the PGA Tour in town this week, that might not be the case.
Yeah.
But just winning scores, bearing in mind that was a 36-hole format over, I think it was like a Monday or a Tuesday or something like that. Lucas Glover in 2009 was 11 under. Ernie Els was 5 under in 2010. 2011 was Keegan Bradley at 4 under. Wind must have blown very strongly 2010 and 11. Mm. Harrington 9 under in 12. Adam Scott 8 under in 2013. He shot a course record 7 under 64. Which is clearly the course record. And Martin Kaymer won the last event, 2014, at 6 under. So, you know, it's been played by some excellent players that haven't exactly ripped it apart, this golf course.
No.
But beware, you know, like I said, we know with the PGA Tour, they like birdies are great, aren't they? You've got to shoot under par. You might find that there's absolutely no rough on the property whatsoever and the whole place has been under a hose for the last 3 weeks. You just don't know. What I can assure you is, though, that the quality of field from the Grand Slam or PGA Grand Slam to this week is completely different. Denny McCarthy is the 16-1 favourite. Wow. Lanto Griffin, who won the Houston Open, is at 18-1. He's in joint second favouritism with Alex Noren. Then you've got Scottie Scheffler and Aaron Wise at 20s. I can't believe I'm reading these names out against some of these prices. Aaron Wise at 20-1. Russell Knox is a 22-1 shot. Your mate Bo is at 25s.
Yeah.
Sam Ryder at 28, who seems very popular with a lot of punters, Sam Ryder. They just follow him week in, week out. I've never really quite got my head around him.
28 is a bit skinny, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I haven't got to the lower reaches yet.
No.
Yeah. Mark Wilson, 600-1. Jason Bone, I thought he'd retired. He's a 600-1 shot. And the local lads from Bermuda are all 1,000-1 shots. They've also brought Jonathan Kay into the mix. Jonathan Kay, I mean, wow. It is a shockingly poor field.
Yeah, and I noticed from the form stats that there's probably 30 or so players that haven't played for at least 3 months in terms of competitive outings. So,
I think what it means, though, Paul, is from a betting perspective, though, it's quite an attractive heat if you can pull some kind of angles around it. So let's work this through. It's a coastal golf course. It's short. It's a par 71 at 6,800 yards. Wow. I can't recall the last time the PGA Tour went to a course like this. That sounds, I mean, European Tour do, but
yeah.
Wow. It's an interesting course on the basis that there's a hell of a lot of undulation. So you've got some really high tees down to low fairways and then vice versa, you've got... You've got tees onto, or from the fairway onto greens that are, you know, way up. Very undulating golf course. Interestingly, I read a interview with Jim Furyk, who basically came out and said it's one of the only golf courses where, to him, power meant absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
it was all pretty much to him, he said, about placement and being able to score. Well, what he meant by that was, you know, basically two of the par fives are long par fours. So he said he was going in with 5 iron on one of the par fives, and that's Jim Furyk, who bangs it 280. He also mentioned that a lot of the par fours are sub 400 yards. So this could be one of those very rare weeks on the PGA Tour where shorter hitters, I wouldn't say have got an advantage, but they're certainly on a level playing field. And that isn't something that we regularly see. It certainly wasn't something that you would have seen, say, at the Houston Open a few weeks ago. So there's a couple of angles in. And just the way that these alternate events tend to work anyway. I've got a section in the preview that you can find in the description box about the winning prices of these events going back. And yes, the last one was won by Colin Morikawa at 12-1. But, you know, previous to that, the Barbasol was 500-1 Jim Herman.
Yeah.
It's just all over the place.
Yeah. That one out.
Graham McDowell at 40s, Martin Traynor at 125s. Those are the guys that have won the four alternate events so far this year. So we've had 12-1, 40-1, 125-1, and 500-1. Year before that, Cameron Champ at 66s, Putnam 28s, Merritt 55s, Garnett 66s. So
yeah, well, mixed.
That's
bag.
Kind of the area that I'm targeting personally. 30-66-1, I think, could be the spot this week. And I've just got a real problem about backing the likes of Alex Noren at 18-1 when he hasn't had a top 10 all year. Russell Knox at 22-1. They're just players that are horribly underpriced for what they've actually done recently. And yes, you can say that they are a class above in a field like this.
At their best,
but, you know, you look at Graham McDowell, who won the Corrales this year. He would be in exactly the same space, but he was 40-1. And 40-1, yeah, I'd probably back Russell Knox if he was 40-1 in this, but he's not. He's 22-1.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at with it. When I've had success in these events in the past, it's trying to find players that give them. I remember tipping up Aaron Baddeley a few years ago at the Barbasol, and he won at 55.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah,
and you could tell with Aaron that when he played these events in the past, these alternate events, he actually gave them some respect. He didn't just turn up and slash it about and go home or finish 56.
No,
he used it as a stepping stone.
Some of them do see it as a proper opportunity to get that card, don't they?
Well, at the end of the day, it's a two-year PGA Tour card that you're going to win. Bearing in mind that that starts from next season. So we're looking at next September that starts from. So you're effectively guaranteeing yourself almost three whole years on the PGA Tour by winning this. And half the players, most of the players can't be bothered to even go and play it. Very bizarre. You know, your Harris English was in the field for this, and then within a couple of weeks ago, he withdrew.
Didn't fancy it.
No, he didn't fancy that 2 year PGA Tour exemption. Far too tempting. So I've gone for four, and I've kind of come at it from different angles. I'll go in reverse order, why not? I've gone for... my record with South Koreans is shocking. This guy will miss the cut, but I've gone for Kung-Hoon Lee. And I thought at 66-1, KH is playing some reasonable stuff at the moment. He was 10th in his homeland at the Genesis Championship a couple of weeks ago. That was the event won by Sung Jae-in.
Yeah.
And then the week after, he was in sixth spot after 36 holes at the CJ Cup.
In far
stronger you think CJ Cup, it was loaded relative to this, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, loaded. Struggled over the weekend, which you'd kind of expect. But in this kind of company, not so sure. 2018 on the Corn Ferry, he finished second in Colombia, second at the North Mississippi Classic, and second at the BMW Charity Pro-Am. All three of those featured courses with Bermuda grass greens. And this year, 7th at the Honda Classic, 14th at the Texas Open, 3rd at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans with Matt Every, all three of those feature Bermuda grass base greens. So he clearly likes Bermuda. I just thought 66 to 1 in this field was a big price for a guy that's clearly in some form. And the issue with Lee is usually the putter. The putter is actually starting to warm up. To me, this is the kind of golf course that will play as difficult as the weather. Thursday looks windy, up to 20 miles an hour. Could play quite nastily, the golf course. And then from that point, it just eases off. So I reckon mid-teens, potentially anything 17, 18 under might win this.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I do fancy a plotter. I'm not so sure it's a bomber's golf course.
Well, no, the dimensions would kind of suggest that's the case, wouldn't they? Certainly, I'm going back to that quote from Jimbo. It's not that.
Now, if you want someone, and Mike Miller at Smart Golf Bets, on Twitter, I believe, although I might have got that wrong, he classifies this golf course as a second-shot golf course. So for me, my strokes gained on approach over the last 8 weeks wasn't a bad spot to look at. I'm seeing Scott Harrington in two, Ryan Armour at three. I came close on Armour. Four, Mark Hubbard, Doc Redman and Boo Weekly. I think Boo Weekly is a great bet at 150 to 1. Although I think he's been tipped up, so you'll find that will go. So be quick. Russell Knox at seven, yeah. Lanto Griffin at eight, DJ Trahan at nine, Cameron Percy at 10. And then we've got the likes of Sepp Straka, who I'd classify more as a bomber and who's never gone back-to-back top 10 in his life. He finished fourth in Houston. We've got Brian Stewart and Brian Gay. And those are the two that I've gone for. Plotters, scorers, guys that love to play with the... What did we always used to say on our previews? With the smell of sea salt in their nostrils.
Yeah. Reacts by the coast.
So I've gone Stewart at 30 to 1. Yeah, it's not a great price, but I've got full seven places. There's a bit of 33s out there, but I thought in this event, grabbing anything each way is better than nothing. So I've gone the seven each way with Boyles at a 50 odds. But you just look at Stewart. Eight PGA Tour top tens by the coast. And this year, you know, he's had four top tens and four top 20s in 2019. Just the kind of guy that's trending towards something. And don't forget, he did win on the PGA Tour. He won a 54-hole event at the 2016 Zurich Classic of New Orleans on Bermuda grass greens. That was the year before it went to the team event.
Yeah. And there's not many in this field, Steve, who can boast a Bermuda win or a win of any description, to be fair.
Sets a few. You know, we're saying taking these tournaments seriously, these alternate events. Twice runner-up at the Mayakoba when it was a an event held at Easter.
Yeah.
Fourth at the Puerto Rico Open and fourth at the Sanderson Farms. So he won't be turning here just to make up the numbers or just to have a few days at the hotel on a sun lounger. I think you'll find that he's here to play. And then Brian Gay, he's at 1.5 points, 40 to one. I've got seven places each way with Paddy Power. Again, he's just another one of these guys. Listen to this. Fifth and sixth at the Sony Open. Eighth and seventh at Pebble Beach. First and sixth at Harbortown. First and fifth at Mayakoba. Fourth and third at Sea Island. I mean, in terms of coastal golf, he's just an absolute animal. And to find him at 40 to 1, bearing in mind he was seventh two outings ago at TPC Summerlin. And you remember that. That tournament in Las Vegas is always of a very high quality. He was a genuine seventh in that. He's already 14th for par four scoring so far on the PGA Tour this year. And in my eight week trackers, he sits third for scrambling, 12th for putting average, 13th for strokes gained on approach. That's a deadly number for someone that's such a great putter. And eighth for strokes gained putting. He's also 12th for strokes gained total. So in my mind, he's 12th in the field in terms of his recent form on that number.
Yeah, I agree.
So I took the 40 to 1. I think that's a decent bet on Brian Gay.
Yeah, I mean, one thing with Gay is we know he's not a long hitter, so the dimensions of this track are gonna suit him very nicely.
Yeah, yeah. I think when these guys turn up and realise, 6,000, well, they must know already. They're clearly well up to spec with what the courses are before they turn up. Mm. But someone like Stu and someone at Gay must look at this opportunity as a real chance on a very short golf course.
Yeah.
And then finally, one in the middle there, 33-1. A guy that is a real talent, I think. A guy that's just hitting his straps in terms of his play at the moment. Again, in my 8-week field tracker, he sits 5th for driving accuracy, brilliant for round here, 2nd for greens in regulation, where we're saying it's a second shot golf course, that'll do me, 2nd for strokes gained off the tee, 4th for strokes gained on approach, and 2nd for strokes gained tee to green. And those numbers are kind of almost being hidden by the fact that his form doesn't appear that great. 24th at the Greenbrier, 52nd at the Sanderson Farms, 42nd at TPC Summerlin, but 13th last time out in Houston, where he closed with 69-67, so top 10 in the field for both of those rounds. Mm. The putter finally connected for Doc Redman. A very, very talented amateur, 2017 US Amateur Champion, won that at Riviera Country Club. He had the likes of Sam Burns, Robert McIntyre, the Scotsman, Joachim Niemann and Matthew Wolff in that field. He beat John Oda and Doug Gim in the semi and the final to win that. He was also second in the Western Amateur that year, losing in the final in a playoff to Norman Jeong. Mm. So this is a guy that's mixed it with the best young talent. You may recall he basically jumped the Corn Ferry by finishing second this year. I think it was at the... I'm trying to remember. Oh, it was at that event that they played in Detroit.
Yeah.
Came from nowhere, finished second on the PGA Tour. And that's the thing with these youngsters now, isn't it? They're young enough, they're good enough, they're mentally strong enough to just jump on the tour and mix it and win.
There's no fear,
there's no fear at all. I could see Redman, now that the putter seems to have connected, having a fantastic week.
Mm.
So Stewart and Gay, in terms of the old-timers, I've gone for my ubiquitous South Korean bet, which tends to go wrong. That's Kong Hoon Lee, but 66s was too good a price. And for the young talent angle, I'm going for Doc Redmond at 33-1. I'll tell you another one I fancy at a big price.
Go on.
I did mention Weekly, who will be backed in from pillar to post, but George McNeil. Do you remember a few weeks ago he finished in the top 7 in one of these events, George McNeil?
Yeah, vaguely remember.
Vaguely. Well, that's the thing with George. Everything's vague, isn't it? He's an old campaigner, isn't he,
yeah,
that barely right, gets any starts on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, he finished 6th, didn't he? That's right.
He was 6th at the Sanderson Farms. At another alternate event last year at the Barracuda, he was 13th. Now, the Barracuda's it's about power, that golf course. And then you go back to March, he was 7th at the Corrales. Mm. So 2 each-way payouts in his last 3 alternate events, and you'll find him at 125-1.
Yeah, as you say, some
of
these players do take these events more seriously than others, simply because they are.
Well, he's an old-timer, isn't he? Yeah. I don't know if he plays... Does he play on the Crinklies Tour? I don't think he does yet, but literally he just seems to come out for these alternate events. But the best thing is he actually plays in them very nicely.
Mm.
So I thought he was a bet. Apart from Bo Hosler and Zach Blair, who are you tipping up this week for this one, Paul?
I haven't quite backed Zach Blair yet, but he's staring at me on the numbers that I've got in front of me, coloured in a very bright green, which tends to be the trigger to go and pull. The one I have backed, actually, from you having talked through Brian Gay, I do like the logic with Gay, and I think I'll have a little bit of a bet.
He's a 4-time PGA Tour winner, mate.
Yeah, I know. 3 times in Bermuda as well. He does like. He's great. There's a lot to like. There is a lot to like, and I think you made a fantastic case for him just now. So I'm very tempted, I must say. The one I have backed is Robert Streb at 50-1.
Similar kind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I third in the Barracuda back in July, so there's a bit of tangible form there. Fifth in the Corn Ferry, the nationwide children tournament they played in August when he was defending. So, again, some relatively recent form. But he started well enough this year. 65 in round two at the Greenbrier. He opened with a 65 in round one at the Sanderson Farms as well. 28th on his last start overall at Houston after a slow start. So just some snippets of form there. But what really got me is that if you talk about some of the key attributes of this track, Bermuda Greens, coastal track, wind in play, he was a full house for me when I looked through that relative to the field here.
He won the RSM Classic, didn't he, at Sea Island?
Yeah, McGladrey, yes. I got back in 2014. Yeah, yeah. Again, that's right, yeah. And that was banging this time of year. I think it was right at the end of October as well. So.
Yep.
In terms of his biorhythms, that could be nice. And the two major top 10 finishes here, a WGC top 5 finish as well to his name. He's at his best. He's a step above the vast majority of this field. So I thought at 50-1, I was happy to take a little punt on him to see if he can walk all over this field, which at his best he should do, really. But just a few signs that he's starting to find a bit of form, so happy to take a punt on Robert Schreber.
You'll find this will be like one of the European Tour events. It's a hot potato, the lead on Sunday, isn't it? And they'll all be passing it to each other, and eventually someone will just have the lead and they'll somehow win it.
Yeah. They'll find that hot potato in their hands at the end of the 72nd hole, and hey, presto, they've won the tournament without.
I was tempted, Paul, on quite a few. I mean, you look at statistically, Denny McCarthy's always great, but you know, a couple of top 10 finishes, but he hasn't actually had an each way payout in either of those.
No,
you know, and he's at 16s. Lanto Griffin's just won. You've also got the likes of Mark Hubbard that's been playing some great stuff. Sepp Straka's coming off a fourth. Scott Harrington was runner-up, wasn't he, behind Lanto Griffin in Houston. That's They've all got great statistics.
Yeah.
But you actually look at winners of these alternate events, very few of them turn up with a runners-up event, the last one, and then win this. It just doesn't happen.
No, expectations too high, isn't it?
Unless you're Colin Morikawa that came off a fourth, who's clearly better grade than any of this.
It's different gravy to these.
A lot of these players will be arriving actually thinking they've got half a chance, and they might look at a Las Vegas book and they're near the top of the betting charts, and all of a sudden they throw in an opening 76.
Yeah, and sayonara.
It just happens, doesn't it? Right. Well, thank you for your time. It's been great.
Lovely. Best of luck this week.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck, of course, to our listeners. We'll be back again next week, when I believe Paul is in Turkey.
Yep.
Not physically in Turkey, but he's at the Turkish Open, which is going back to the Max Montgomery.
Yeah, the Montgomery Max, where it was held at the start of the event a few years back. Yeah.
And I'm in Cancun for the Mayakoba Classic, which is a tournament I always like, actually. And normally gets a half decent field. So they're the two events for next week. Thank you to listeners. As I said at the start, rate and review us, we would be most appreciative. And of course, we'll be back next week for the Golf Betting System podcast. Goodbye.